It's 5 o'clock in Pirate Country, and it's time to get pumped up with the P-Man. Hit the door and hit the road. 94.3 The Game is going to get you home, and the P-Man's not holding back.
Yes! Yes! Pirates win! Pirates win!
Bring on the Patrick Johnson Show on 94.3 The Game.
Holy mackerel! Oh, my goodness!
The flagship station of the ECU Pirates.
Well, wasn't that a kick in the shorts? Pirates lose in overtime, 80-77. Welcome in. It is the Patrick Johnson Show. East Carolina didn't lead the whole game, but they pretty well dominated the whole game, dictated a lot of the pace. SMU didn't play well, but the Pirates probably should have gotten that one in Dallas last night. R.J. Felton went off 28 points, but not enough. You got 13 from Brandon Johnson. Nice night for Malanga with a board shy of a double-double. Career high in points for him. But it was not to be. ECU got off to a really hot start. SMU missed 18 shots in a row at one point. Just a tough one. Just a tough one. RJ has scored in double figures in 22 games. Tough deal. That's all you could really say is it's a tough deal. We're going to hear from Coach Swartz in a Pirate Report. Probably do that next segment. Mike Mullis will join us near the bottom of the hour. We'll talk ECU baseball. Cy Seymour is slated to join us here any minute. And he joins us right now, in fact, telephonically. Cy Seymour, former Pitt, or rather Craven Community College head basketball coach for many, many seasons. Cy also a radio analyst for ECU basketball for 23 years and then has spent the last three carrying me on the telecasts on ESPN+. So the great Cy Seymour joins us here from the place that he runs, New Bern. You get in any kind of a situation in New Bern, good, bad, or indifferent, just say the name Cy Seymour. And you'll be fine. Cy, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Patrick. How about you?
Doing well. Looking forward to the regular season finale on Saturday against Charlotte. But, boy, last night to come out and play so well and have such a good game plan and then lose is really, really tough for East Carolina. And, I you just wonder how much will be left in the tank not only because of the emotion of losing and pouring out all of that energy and effort, but just the travel, the way it's been the last month for this team. Saturday could be a little bit of a tough putt, maybe.
It could be a tough putt, but I'm like, first of all, and you know this because you've been an announcer for a long time. When you get into the month of February and then early March, everybody's tired. Everyone is on edge in basketball. They have been together since November, and everybody's got given all they have, and in this league, as you said it, the travel has really been detrimental to ECU. It's since February the 7th or 8th when you lived in the state of Texas, and so I mean three trips, and then you got to go back for the championships there. You just spent the last week in Texas. Now you come home, probably got in at 3 a.m. and then you got to come back and get ready on 2 days rest for your rival. I think people need to understand that's part of the problems in a spread out league. And so you got to give credit to this staff for even having them ready to play against a really good SMU team and had their chances to win it. And it was a frustrating loss. And those kids gave everything and the coaches gave everything. It is really frustrating this late. If you win that one, that's a big deal. So it is a tough loss.
R.J. Felton, what can you say about him that's not already been said, Cy? I mean, he was amazing, got off to a hot start, was aggressive early. And we talked about it with Brian Mull yesterday, and I'll say it here. To me, R.J. Felton, I don't know if he's a first-team guy, but I certainly think R.J. is a second-team guy. And if he doesn't make at least the second team, I think there's some it's a real injustice.
Oh, I agree with you. And they had him preseason second team, and I believe that's about right with him. If you were winning more, he could be a first team player. You know, he gets half your threes last night. I mean, and he's he's a 6'3", 6'2" guard that can just, he can sky. I mean, he hits the boards. He does everything. He got 9 rebounds last night, and he 2 of them offensive. He's always getting in the glass on the offensive end. He does so many good things for your basketball team. And so you can't say, and he gives you everything he's got. He's, you know what I say he is? If you take Houston and they're all 6'7" and 6'8", that's the kind of energy level that Houston has.
Yeah.
And we have in R.J. Felton. He is relentless. He never gets tired. And I said this early in the year. I went over to watch him practice one day, and I said, well, it looks like you'll get some rest because we got a lot of good guards. He said, I don't want rest. That's exactly what he told me. He said, I don't want rest. He wants to play. And, you look up at his time, and he doesn't even hesitate. Look, that ball game last night, 41 of the 45 minutes he played. That's tough.
Yeah. I think Cy, too, he got fouled at the end of the game. Not to be, sour grapes, but, you're not going to get that call on the road. Hell, with East Carolina, I don't even know if you'd got that call at home, but, he clearly got fouled at the end of the game.
Well, it's part of it, and you're right. On the road, when it gets to be a hustle-bustle, it generally doesn't go for the visiting team. But the other part is, too, give credit to SMU. They hit 3 tough shots, to help them get there. I thought East Carolina outplayed them. I thought East Carolina did most of the things they needed to do, especially down the stretch. That last 5 or 6 minutes of the game, they really did a nice job, and they got beat by an SMU team that has really got a lot of talent. But I thought ECU in this particular ball game deserved to win it. It's just part of road life that is so, so difficult. And that's why the people need to get out and support this ball club. And you get this time of year, weather gets warm, it's spring break, but nah, you need to support this ball club. They've given you everything. And Patrick, we've talked about it. They're going to finish. Everybody thinks this is crazy. They're going to finish in 8th grade. They're going to get a bye on the first day of the term. They're going to finish in 8th place because there are 6 teams below them. We've been doing this forever. We did it back when Evansville was playing. You were doggone well for ECU to get a bye in a tournament and to come in 8th instead of, 9 on down, 6 teams below them. That's a big difference in this ECU program. They're on the right track. They're just not there yet. And, and give credit to all these guys working, all the coaches. They're killing themselves to get this program where it needs to be. Not a lot of time to point fingers. It's time to support. And I think that's what people need to understand.
Yeah. Well, 14-16, 7-10 in the American. I have a chance to go 8-10 and 15-16 going into the tournament. Sir Malanga comes through last night in a big way. Had a block shot to go along with the 10 points and 9 rebounds. So I think Malanga, we kind of saw what we may see. 5 offensive rebounds last night. We're going to see what we might see out of him as far as growth. And I hope he plays a lot Saturday because I think he's only gotten better as he's gotten more time consistently.
No doubt about it. 33 minutes, he got 9 rebounds. That's unbelievable. I tell you what he does, Patrick. He disrupts everybody coming in to drive the paint. And listen, the SMU team's used to finishing. I mean, don't let anybody kid you. They had the player of the year. The guy that hit the jumper to tie it up, he was the player of the year for the state of Texas. I mean, he's 6'5", Zurich. He's played, and he's a senior, and he's the real deal. Williamson's an McDonald's All-American at 6'8 or 6'9, that forward. None of them wanted to take it to the paint with Malanga in there. He intimidated every one of them. And you saw it really what he can do for ECU. Unbelievable. You've got to be excited if you're Mike Schwartz and the staff about that young man's play. And I certainly was watching it last night because he's a force in the paint. And most of the times you don't get a kid like that. That kid's a real force. And so, yes, you're exactly right. And you hope he gets a big game on Saturday because – Charlotte is that good a team. It's going to take everything you've got to beat that Charlotte team.
Yeah, Charlotte fends off Rice at home on their senior night, and it was a game that they had a pretty comfortable lead throughout much of the first half. I left it at halftime to watch the ECU game, but I was very impressed with Igor, the kid. I thought he was superb last night. I like the other kid, Jackson, for them. So, you know, they have some really impressive parts, and they've had a great year. And right now, they're looking at a double bye.
Exactly. Aaron Fern is a good coach. He's done a really good job with his ball club. And you're right. When you look at Miljic, he is a great player. He gets 26. That's his career high at Charlotte. He played at UVA a year. See, that's the other thing. You look at these kids. He's a 6'10 kid from UVA that's from Poland that played for the national team. Deshaun Jackson, who is scary good, is 6'10. And he's a Washington State transfer. Reber is a Rutgers transfer. He's 6'10". Robert Braswell is a Syracuse transfer. He's 6'7". They've got pieces of the puzzle that give credit to Aaron Fern. He's put that program together. They play really good. They're calm, and they are gritty. And fun to watch. And I'm not even counting their guards. Their guards struggled last night. That game at the end was close. I watched all of that, and then I recorded ours and watched all of ECU's game. That game was a gritty, grinding game, and it was fun to watch. And Charlotte pulled it out, but it was a ball game, and both teams played well. But they've got the pieces of the puzzle that are really good.
A couple more things for Cy Seymour here joining us. Then we'll do a Pirate Report, Mike Mullis, later on in the show. Cy, what has happened with Ezra Azar? Only played 7 minutes last night.
Yeah, of course, when you're not there every day, you don't know all the ins and outs, but I can assure you this, if he wasn't playing, there's for a reason. And he's been a little inconsistent. He's not been, personally, I don't think he's, you know, in the right places on the floor a lot of times. I don't think he's been concentrating, losing his concentration. Is he a good athlete? Pretty darn good athlete. Can he run like a deer? But all of the pieces of the puzzle haven't happened. And he's young. He's a sophomore. Now, that's what can happen with sophomores. The question is, can you get it out of him? And the only people who know that are the guys that work with him every day. Somebody can complain and say, why did he play Ezra Moore? Or why didn't he do this? Or why don't you do that? You can't do that. These guys see him every day. They're getting everything they can out of their ball club. And they know what's right. And listen, without him last night, ECU played extremely well. I mean, you know, Malanga got you 33 minutes and got you almost a double-double. He played well. He intimidates. Now, Ezra's got to figure out what his role is going to be and is he willing to work hard enough to get there. Again, I'm not there every day, but I'm just saying, whatever these coaches see, that's what they do for a living.
It's senior day, Cy, on Saturday, and Brandon Johnson and Cam Hayes are listed as the seniors. Johnson's already graduated, as we know. Hayes has been here for about 15 minutes. Is this do we read anything into this, or is it just, you know, you kind of do that because they are seniors?
You know, I don't know how to read anything anymore when it comes to that. Now with the portal, how do you read it? How do you read anything that goes on now? You know, what I do like is that Brandon Johnson came here and graduated, and I like him as a kid, and I love his mom. He's from Roseville, North Carolina. He's had a good career, and I'm just real proud of him. And like Cam Hayes has come in, I thought Cam played really, really well the last 6 weeks. I think he's finally gotten comfortable and played well for East Carolina. He can defend. He can shoot it. But does he come back? I don't know. I hope so. I think he can help East Carolina. But does Brandon? I don't know. I just don't know. But all I know is that he's given you good years, and he's graduated. And that's a big deal. That's a big deal for that young man. And so you got to give him a hand for being a Pirate and doing what was right.
Cy, what will it take on Saturday? And again, it's a 4 o'clock game on Saturday, 3:30 airtime on 94.3 The Game and 107.9 WNCT. Cy and I will be on ESPN Plus, and you're going to have a big crowd there, or need to have a big crowd there. Excuse me.
Yes, you do.
You know, the lower bowl tickets $10 because the students are gone on spring break. So what will it take for the Pirates to come through that day?
Well, first of all, I think, first of all, you got to really defend their bigs. They are very good, and that's where Malanga can really help you in this game. Really, the most physical guy on that ball club inside is Jackson, Deshaun Jackson. And he can be really physical, can get into foul trouble, but he is physical. The big man, he can do anything. Milicic can do anything. He can shoot it. He can step out. He can defend. He can get it. And he's under control. He's calm. But the best player may be Patterson, their guards. So you got all the pieces of the puzzle there. So you got to defend them all. The other part is you got to shoot the free ball well, and you got to control the glass. You got to hit the offensive glass against this team. If there's any weakness, it may be the offensive glass. So you can't turn it over. Too many turnovers the last time ECU last basketball game against SMU. 18 turnovers. You can't do that against this Charlotte team.
Great to talk to you, Cy. We'll see you on Saturday.
Look forward to it, Patrick. Have a good one.
All right, Cy Seymour, there he goes. Timeout. We'll come back. Quick Pirate Report. And then Mike Mullis will join us on the Patrick Johnson Show.
And now, Patrick Johnson with today's Pirate Report on the flagship station of the ECU Pirates, 94.3 The Game.
All right, Pirates lose in overtime, 80-77. And Coach Schwartz says that one hurt.
Told the team that, you know, that I know they're hurting. I mean, that regardless of the way the last few games have gone, I mean, I know our guys poured every ounce of effort and heart and fight into this game, and I thought we played pretty well. So it's a hurt locker room. So, obviously we talked about that aspect of it. We just talked about what resiliency means and being a resilient person, a resilient basketball player, a resilient teammate, and a resilient team. And we have to be that right now because that one does hurt. I'm not going to, say it any other way or sugarcoat it. That one hurts a great deal.
Mike Schwartz on why the Pirates came up on the wrong end of the stick in OT.
You know, we talked about the basketball part on why we fell short. It wasn't, we talked about that last shot that Phelps hit, and you gave him credit. He was 0 for 7 on the night, and he makes a huge three to tie the game. But every time we had a 5-point lead, we had a 4-point lead, and we had a 3-point lead, and every time they made a three and a difficult three. Contested three, a shot fake three at the buzzer, and then that three, which was really obviously difficult. That's a hard one to take. And you know, I looked at the play, and when RJ was bringing the ball up the court, I didn't think their defense was set. I looked at they were hesitant to foul, and I thought RJ had actually a pretty good lane, and it just doesn't go your way. But that's nothing to do with why we didn't win. The reason we didn't win the basketball game, and we did talk about this too, was 17 turnovers and 21 offensive rebounds. And, we held them to 32.9% shooting. On the road for us, on the road, in their building, but we did not do a good enough job securing rebounds and taking care of the basketball.
And Coach talked about the Stang's ability to get on the offensive backboards.
Obviously, you guys know we were trying to, play a bigger lineup, and with the rebounding, he rebounded, but we still just, again, I give, SMU is the best offensive rebounding team in the league, and and they showed why in terms of how they rebound the basketball. I mean, Tyreek Smith gets 5 offensive rebounds, and, Ambrose Hilton, he gets 5 himself. So they had 10 right there, and, that's what ends up being the difference. I mean, their two five-men really rebounded the ball well on the offensive, and they got extra shots and got to the foul line. And, and they made free throws. They were 24 for 29.
And what it would have meant to win this game, Coach Schwartz.
Real good team, and you guys know how I feel about Rob Lanier and their team, and it was a quad one opportunity, and we don't get to talk much about that at ECU, but a top 75 road win in the net is equivalent to a quad one win, and that would have been special for this program to do that. And again, they're quad one because they're a really good team.
Yes,
this is a team that is an excellent team that's going into the ACC, and last time in conference play that we'll play here in this Coliseum, and but we fell short.
This on why guys saw more minutes last night.
It was rebounding and energy based. Yep. You know, to be honest with you. So anything you see on that is just about we needed to try and get our rebound. And Sear did the job. I mean, Sear went and got 9 rebounds. I mean, and that's what we need from that position. To be quite, I mean, we got 20 rebounds out of our front court. So that worked. Unfortunately, we just weren't able. You know, R.J. Felton gets 9 rebounds. The rebound was working. We just didn't do a good enough job keeping their guys off. I mean, Williamson has 13 rebounds. But the offensive rebounds were big, and that ends up being the difference in the game, the offensive rebounds.
ECU will play Charlotte in the regular season finale on Saturday, 4 o'clock from Williams Arena Minji's Coliseum. And I guess the game will be on 107.9. I said 94.3 the game, but I think baseball will be on around that time. Pilk, correct me if I'm wrong there. So it'll be 107.9 WNCT with a 3:30 airtime and a 4 o'clock tip on Saturday for Pirate basketball on the radio. Darren Vaught, Coach Perry. I'll be joined by Cy Seymour and ESPN Plus. Let's go now to our guest line where the great Mike Mullis joins us here to talk some Pirate baseball as ECU heads to Liberty. Mully, how are you?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Doing well. Hey, what is that big orange ball in the sky? What is that? What is that,
Mully? Yeah, isn't this crazy? Yeah, hey, don't get used to it. At first, I didn't know if you were referring to my head, but we have the sun right now. We need to enjoy it for a couple of days because it certainly has been a long time coming.
So, obviously, East Carolina loses a game this week. They don't play 2 that they had on the docket. Is that a positive? What's the silver lining of that? I guess, the pitching and the availability of some guys was a little wonky. But I know you don't want to lose 2. You at least would have liked to have tried to get 1 in.
Yeah, nobody wanted to lose both those ball games. To lose one, you go, well, okay, you chalk that up the time of the year, and it's just part of the game at large. But you definitely didn't want to lose 2. Now you kind of got to get back on track and refocused, and ready to go again against a Liberty team that's frankly not what we've come to expect of Liberty clubs. Again, very early in the season, but a team that's only hitting about 250 as a club and pitching it around around a 7 clip when I look. But it's, you still have to get refocused and ready to go again. And all that said, and who wants to spend their spring break watching it rain?
You know, those guys are in a hotel. I'm talking about VCU. And it's a lot different if you're on the road in a situation where it's just constant rain. Now, They had the benefit of being able to avail themselves of the indoor facilities that ECU has, but that's not always the case. I can't imagine for anybody. There's nothing worse than sitting around a hotel while it's raining and you really don't have anything. And you're on spring break, so it's not like you have any work that's due.
No, so I think my most extreme scenario in my playing or coaching career was – back in 2005 when we won the American Legion State title, we get to Gastonia, North Carolina, playing in Cherryville. And PJ, we lost like the first 2 or 3 days, I don't remember exactly, due to rain. So we get there, we have the banquet, we have all the opening ceremonies, and then we sit on our hands for, it was either 2 or 3 days, and we end up being there for 10 days in total because we had weather that was jockeying games. And, I tell you, you get creative as a coach. And we didn't have access to an indoor facility. So what we made the decision, okay, how can we make this time impactful and beneficial for the players, and who else can we impact and benefit with our free time? And we reached out to the Boys and Girls Club, and we went to the local Boys and Girls Club and hung out with the kids and, shot basketball. And did whatever they did. Our guys played video games with them and arts and crafts. And our kind of their reciprocation of appreciation to us for that time was they gave us an hour at the end of the day in the gym where we could kind of just play toss, throw a little bit. We went out
right,
and parked
yeah.
a lot. But, You just get creative.
Tough for VCU because they had to go. And then, you know, we saw, you and I have either seen in person or the picture of, you know, the infield dirt. That was kind of a tough situation at Clark LeClaire. So it does need some dry time, but they've had to do a lot of maintenance on the fairway, so to speak, to get that to where it's in a position to dry and be ready to go, I guess, next weekend.
Yeah, and you know, you absolutely, that's 100% true. And you also don't want to do an extended amount of damage to the ballpark, to the surface, that, you know, Joey Perry and his crowd do such a great job of keeping in, you know, top shape. So, look, there was an oops on day one, kind of a bad interpretation of a forecast or a bad forecast. You know, we've all been fooled by what the weatherman says. And a decision was made, and, you know, you're stuck kind of betwixt and between. If you leave the tarp on too long, you can suffocate your grass. And obviously we're kind of in a changeover season where chemicals have been put out and different things. So anyway, you don't want to choke out the grass, but you certainly don't want to get the surface saturated. And somewhere in trying to decide what was the best thing to do, the tarp was left off, and, you know, and it is what it is. I mean, it's just an honest mistake. I do, PJ, find it very interesting that the conspiracy theorists feel like anybody at either program was afraid to play. That's beyond laughable to me. They apparently don't know the makeup of Cliff Godwin in this Pirate program.
Fans, not all. They get very mad when I say this, but most fans are pretty well dumb. They're pretty well idiots. Now, the fans that get really mad, the fans that get mad when I say that are the idiots, by the way. But I mean, how dumb can you have to be to think that? Man, it's just stupid.
Maybe I kind of look at it the other way. I think it's the vocal minority that you know, wants to come out and, you know, kind of the keyboard warrior syndrome, but I just think it's ridiculous. And these kids have worked their butts off since they got here in August for the opportunity to play these games, along with the coaching staffs who recruit these players and all the time, energy, and effort that's put into it, not to mention the financial ramifications of having, you know, VCU sitting in a hotel for a couple of days. So it's completely irrational, but what we see, hence the name fan coming from, you know, the term fanatic, and some people, they cast their blame where they can just because they're upset that it wasn't Pirate baseball. And I guess for that, we should be grateful to have passionate fans.
The other thing, I mean, these are some of the same nitwits that are, as Cliff Godwin said on our coaches show Monday, sliding into the DMs of players. I mean, dude, get a life.
Yeah, there is nothing acceptable about that. These are still young men. They're very impressionable. And as a fan goes into a kid's social media to direct message them in an effort to maybe offer them a correction, what they're doing is offering another fault that kid doesn't need, that young man doesn't need. And it's unfortunate, you know, but it comes with the times too, right? It's kind of like, be careful what you wish for when, you know, all of the players have their social media handles are on their rosters, and they're far more accessible than they've ever been.
Yeah, it's crazy. Hey, Molly, can you hang through the update and the break? We'll talk more about the team itself. All right. Mike Mullis is with us. Lots to talk about with Molly. Right now, Philip the Ref Pilkington with a 94.3 The Game Sports Update and Pirate Report. Pilk?
Thanks, P-Man. Starting in Pirate Athletics, the Pirates dropped a heartbreaker last night in overtime, 80-77 to the SMU Mustangs, their final home game as part of member of the American Athletic Conference. After the game, Coach Swartz talked about resilience and how they can segue that tough loss into Saturday's contest.
We missed a couple right at the rim in overtime, but just a hard fight and a little bit, obviously a disappointed locker room, but we just talked about resiliency and what this game will mean to us on Saturday.
On Saturday, they will host the Charlotte 49ers. You can hear it on our sister station, 107.9 94.3. We'll join at the conclusion of baseball. It is a 3:30 airtime for that 4 o'clock tip. It will be Senior Day here in Greenville. In the NFL, the Broncos are releasing safety Justin Simmons. This will free up $14 million in cap space, which they are much needed, as they will still have $85 million in dead cap that they will owe to quarterback Russell Wilson. Simmons has been with the team for all 8 of his NFL seasons. The Bills have renegotiated the contract of All-Pro edge rusher Von Miller. They have cut his base salary from $17.5 million to $8.8 million. This will save the team just over $8 million in cap space. The 34-year-old can earn up to $20 million in incentives. The Canes will be back in action tonight as they host the Montreal Canadiens, the last game before the trade deadline. They have activated goalie Antti Raanta from the IR. That'll do it for your 94.3 The Game Sports Flash Update and Pirate Report. On the other side of this timeout, we will have more on the weekend that is ahead with the Liberty Flames and Pirate Baseball with Mike Mullis.
Download the new IVX Media app now and get the show for your ears and eyes.
Doesn't it look great on me?
This is the Patrick Johnson Show on 94.3 The Game.
Pirate Baseball this weekend starting at 4 o'clock tomorrow, a 3:45 airtime on 94.3 The Game, so we'll be preempted. Saturday is right now set for 2, Sunday at 1. I've not checked the forecast up in Lynchburg today. Mully, have you, or have you, was it your day to keep up with it?
Actually, it's kind of funny. I was just looking at it, or just pulling it up, just out of curiosity as you were saying that. So I have not looked at it, but I will certainly know shortly.
Yeah, it looks like rain Saturday is what it looks like.
I'm seeing an 80% chance.
Say that again, Pilk. What are you doing, button in, Pilk?
I said I'm seeing an 80% chance of rain.
I'm seeing 98% chance, oof. Pilk. I see your 80 and raise you 98, or raise you 18 to 98.
There you go. I don't know if I can take that.
So I think there'll be, you will be able to start next week. So I think you've got probably Mully a deal there where it's going to be a doubleheader on Sunday, right?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like one day they would certainly need to do that. I don't know. It's crazy, it just always seems to go this way. You either have like whatever weather you have it in buckets at this time of the year. So this just happens to be buckets of rain, and we're having obviously a good drying day today. You've got a little sun out and a breeze, but you get it ready to. You know, like the local high schools get ready to try to play tomorrow, and then Saturday happens. So, you know,
right.
It's just
right.
part of playing outdoor sport.
Mully, how does that, if you got to do a doubleheader all of a sudden, affect your pitching and how you're going to manipulate the lineup? Or does
it? You know, I don't, you look at it same way, you know, and now the only, it probably favors the hitters a little bit from the standpoint of, when I say favors, of staying in the lineup. Obviously, you go out and have a great game day one, game one, you're likely just to roll right back in to game two, as opposed to having another BP and a break between, you know, between the two games. But otherwise, man, you know, you just manage it like any other games. If it positionally probably has the biggest effect on your catching, you know, kind of hard to run a guy out there behind the plate for 18 consecutive, but otherwise, you know, I think, and especially being early in the year and it's not super hot, or there are no factors weather-wise other than the rain, I think you just kind of roll with it.
Mike, when you look back at this past weekend at the LeClaire Classic, what stands out?
The job that the starting pitching did, kind of the same story for the whole year. Trey is savage. People don't understand, because unless they saw Purdue play the rest of the weekend, that was a really offensive baseball club that Trey is savage was truly masterful against. And, you know, you turn a 7-run lead over to your bullpen and they only have to get you 3 outs. I've said it 1,000 times. I would take that trade off anytime you want to do it. So what an incredible job he did, Root. Although I didn't feel like he had his best stuff, we saw him throw the pitches that weren't Root-like. And even when he was 94 early, you know, they peppered some balls pretty decent, got off some decent swings against him. He kind of got better as the outing went on. His breaking stuff was really good. And, you know, he was efficient and effective. And same thing, gave him a really good outing. You know, as it pertains to that Southeast Louisiana game, I don't think people recognize how good that program is. And, I mean, they played LSU last night, had LSU on the ropes into the ninth. And I think they, you know, LSU manages to find two or three runs there tonight to win the game. But, I mean, that's a game. That's a good ball club. And the losses, I was talking with a coach yesterday, and the losses that East Carolina has, they are not hang your head losses. They're not. I mean, they are all teams that you could potentially see being in the postseason when this thing's all said and done. And I'm not saying that from a you know, trying to convince anybody of anything. I personally am convinced that those are quality clubs, and the Pirates have 4 losses and a total of 5 runs. So sure, there are things they need to shore up if the, you know, when the bullpen comes around, and hopefully it will. That will change things a lot for this club. Those losses probably flip the wins, at least a couple of them. And you know, but that's part of the maturation process, not only of each individual, but of the team and where everybody fits in their roles.
Carter Cunningham is leading the American in hitting. He's the team leader in home runs. He is tied for the club lead in RBI going into this weekend. Senior, one of those guys that is really seemingly taking advantage of his last go-around in an ECU uniform.
Yeah, he might be the best portal acquisition Cliff ever got, right? You know, he entered the portal after, I think it was after his freshman year, and Cliff went back in there and said, wait a minute, big guy, we may need you. So, yeah, he's, I mean, he's been absolutely locked in. Jenkins Coward locked in. I mean, you know, these guys are swinging a bat at a really high level, and they are very offensive, and you know that bodes well. Again, I said earlier, Liberty was pitching it at a 7. They're now down to a just under a 6, a 5.87. I think this thing stacks up for East Carolina to have a lot of success against the Flames. Again, you know, they're hitting 250 and pitching it at 5.87. If you just compare the stats, and obviously that's why the games are played, is the stats, sure, you know, are only a reference point. But, you know, it leans heavily towards the Pirates.
Liberty comes in, and you've alluded to this a little bit in their stats, but they're 5-7. They got swept by Coastal, who's really, really good, last weekend down in Conway. And then College of Charleston knocks them off earlier in the week. What else is the book on the Flames, who, you know, they're starting pitching, especially their frontline guys, Friday night, Saturday night guys have gotten knocked around pretty good.
Yeah, and I think that's the story. You flip that with the fact that they know that they're going to face 3 frontline arms for East Carolina that are really, really good. And Jake Hunter didn't have his best outing. He had a serviceable outing last time out. We've seen him better, and I think we'll probably see him better next time around. He's a competitive fella. But, yeah, I mean, that's the story, bud. I think it's our, you know, will they be the first ones to figure out Yesavage and Root specifically, and then what success they have against Jake Hunter? I think our hitters will do ultimately fine against their staff. And then it's a race to the bullpen, I think, as most of college baseball is right now. It's you know, and you wonder, at some point, do you start to see teams make some wholesale changes, maybe taking a guy that was a more of a reliable kind of starter, moving him to a position in the bullpen to shorten games? I don't know. I don't know what you do. I think each team is probably different. But, I mean, I think that's the story for this weekend is again, going to be – you know, who gets to the pen first? If Liberty can get into our pen, does that give them a chance? Probably a better chance than it would against those frontline guys. But, you know, it's you know what? It's the same story of every baseball game, PJ. It's Can our hitters hit your pitching, and can your hitters hit our pitching?
Right. Molly, Joey Barini was not slated to start the two games midweek because of a wrist issue. I assume he'll be in there this weekend. That was kind of the impression I got based on what Cliff Godwin said, unless, you know, it's aggravated or it's gotten any worse. But, you know, that does change some things on the infield for the Pirates. I mean, you could see Dixon Williams maybe at some point at short. You've got Nate Chrisman, who certainly I think was slated to start the games against VCU this weekend. And, you know, that does kind of change things a little bit for what the Pirates may or may not do. And you got Colby Wallace. I guess if you did move Dixon to short, Wallace could play third base for you.
Yeah, and I think Dixon would be the second option behind Chrisman, but that may be an offensive adjustment. Going back to your question earlier about a doubleheader, that may affect Barini. They may not want him to play and then have that time to cool down kind of between games and then go back out with that wrist injury. But again, I think that's the only way you get a feel for that is to be in the dugout and be able to talk to Barini and see how he's feeling.
Right. Yeah.
Quite frankly, you know, Barini's not having the offensive season he would like. We have seen Chrisman a fair amount, obviously with the big sack fly the other day. Chrisman at short is certainly serviceable. Dixon Williams at short is certainly serviceable. I do think that, you know, that's a pretty easy move for them to make for the fact that they, you know, that Colby Wallace has gotten now a fairly significant number of ABs in consecutive games and, you know, him going in to play third base. And my question is, man, I just wonder will we see that kid pitch. You know, he's on the roster as a two-way guy and, you know, all reports, and I've not seen him pitch at all, but talking to some guys that have, they say he's really good. So, you know, but there's a difference in really high school good and really major college baseball good. So we'll see how the staff handles that going forward. But, yeah, I mean, there are some changes they can make. Still got the freshman Parham that can, you know, go in there. So I think there's, you know, per a typical Cliff Godwin team, there's plenty of versatility that, you know, that could kind of fit the bill.
We're talking to Mike Mullis here, and then you got Riley Johnson shoulder. I think the shoulder popped out and popped back in. I think maybe against Southeastern Louisiana. I don't recall anything that leaped to the mind for the two games you and I did for Plus this past weekend. So, I mean, that's another issue. He's dealt with it for a while. But, again, when you get into a situation like that with a doubleheader, now the good news is there's some pretty good depth in the Pirate outfield.
Yeah, interestingly enough, I had a chance to talk to Riley. I was taking one of my sons. He and I went and had lunch, and he wanted to get a haircut. So we went to get a haircut, and here comes Riley. And so we talked a little bit. The first thing I asked him, I was like, how close were you to catching that ball on Sunday? And he said, really, really close. And he said, you know, I asked him about, you know, how he was feeling, and he's fought these shoulder issues, both shoulders, and multiple surgeries, and kind of, you know, fighting his way through it. But he said it, you know, it kind of popped out, and Cunningham met him over there in center field. They talked about it for a second, and he was able to get it back in there, and, you know, away he went. So yeah, but outfield depth is certainly not a problem for this team when you've got Bristol Carter. Obviously, Cunningham can go out there. Nowak can go out there. We've seen Cam Clonch go out there. And I really, even naming all those names, I still feel like I'm missing somebody because they are certainly very deep and very athletic in the outfield.
Last thing. Well, two things. Next to last thing, just to clarify, your kids were getting the haircut, not you. Just want to clarify.
Correct. That kind of goes back to the fanatic. That's kind of a bad question, PJ. I just got to tell you. I mean,
I'm not talking movies, at least, right?
No, but we could do that.
No, unless it's a one run or it's a tie game in the 11th, then don't do it. All right,
that's let the me only ask way you, that you're gonna get.
All right, let that's me ask you. You talk about defense in the outfield. We'll go back to JJC here really quick. Remember last year he was getting pulled late games. He's played pretty well defensively this year, I think.
Oh, man, vastly improved. And there would even be, and you know, again, I hate to be disrespectful or sliding a young man, but there were even quote unquote routine balls that were hit to him, the old can of corn that you would kind of hold your breath until he had fully cradled and embraced that baseball, just worrying about what might happen. But he's been pretty steady out there, pretty sure. And, you know, I think part of that probably is obviously come with reps and maturity. I think the other part is now they're recognizing, hey, he's a right fielder. Like, as athletic as he is and as well as he throws and rangy and all those things, you want to see that guy maybe give it a go in center field for, and quite frankly, a lot of that is for the improvement of your program potentially, but it certainly helps him down the road, you know, as he continues to try to extend his career past college. So, but I think the reality is let's put him in right. Let's leave him in right. No different than, you know, Nowak, same thing. We saw him really struggling right, and he seems to be fairly comfortable. He's made some really dynamic plays in left. He's had a couple issues in left. So maybe, you know, we continue to see him mature. But, yes, Jenkins Calvert has been much improved in the outfield, no question.
And then after this weekend, the Pirates head to UNCW, and that's never easy next Tuesday.
Yeah, that's right. They're always going to get a fight down there. And, you know, any Randy Hood coach team is going to be very, very well coached. They're going to scrap. Something about those teams on the coast, you know, when you get out there, I think that the comparisons between how Coastal Carolina plays and UNCW plays are very similar. I think historically or of recent history, Coastal has probably gotten maybe a notch more talented guys top to bottom on the roster, but very similar teams, and quite frankly, a team that that is going to give you a fit regardless of who you are.
Thanks, Mully. Good luck to you and Conley, and have a great weekend.
Thank you, brother. I'll see you soon.
All right, there he is, the great Mike Mullis, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks to him. Thanks to Cy Seymour. Thanks to Philip the Ref Pilkington. No show tomorrow. Pirate baseball at 4. ECU basketball on 107.9. 4 o'clock on Saturday with a 3:30 airtime. Cy Seymour and myself on ESPN Plus. Hope you'll join us there. See you in the morning on Talk of the Town. Have a great rest of your sports evening, everybody.